Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. After a couple of great podcast interviews over the last 2 weeks, it is back to just me this week. I am going to be doing a rider Q&A podcast. So I've been having some really good questions come in lately, got some good ones piled up, and so I wanted to take this podcast to answer a few of them and share my insights with you guys on them. We've got three good questions that we're going to get to. The first one is whether it's okay to turn your foot out a little bit on your pedal, especially if it helps relieve some pain like in the groin or the knee. We're also going to talk about what my new standards are for MTB specific strength. I've famously helped create the 1.5 to 2 times body weight deadlift standard. Is one of the basic things you're looking for as a mountain biker, as a strength standard. And somebody was asking me if I had updated that recently, especially with all of my work in isometrics, and it got me thinking that indeed I had, and so I wanted to share what those things were. And then finally, I wanted to talk about the difference between training your brain and just building mental toughness, and why ultimately most cardio programs are falling short, because they're really just kind of like a form of mental toughness training, and we're not really training the brain to get the body to react a certain way and act a certain way in specific situations that we find on the trail. And so I wanted to touch on that. Again, I had a rider had a really good question in that area, so I wanted to touch on that. But before we get going, as always, the Bike James podcast is brought to you by Pedaling Innovations. That is the my company with the Catalyst pedal. The Catalyst pedal is the world's only midfoot optimized pedal. It is designed to interface with your foot in the way that your foot is designed to work. So again, a lot of people don't look at and take into account the context of athleticism on the bike, right? Like what it takes to be athletic on your bike is going to be different than what it takes to be athletic in the pool, right? For a swimmer, right? Like, so the different sports and different situations require different things to be athletic and for you to move the way that you need to in that situation and context. And so athleticism is contextual. So when you look at what is the context of being athletic on our bike, and everything starts with the feet, you see that our feet do not come off the pedals. Okay, and so this is very different than if your feet are coming off of what they're on. So the context for being athletic on our bike, where our feet are staying in contact with the pedals the whole time, is more like surfing or skiing or skateboarding, or you know, sports where they are riding something that's carrying them through space. Again, very similar to the same context that we have on a bike. The bike is carrying us through space. The problem is that people look at sports that have a different context. And so they look at, you know, running and jumping sports, or even like Olympic lifting. Like if you've ever Olympic lifted before, you know that one of the cues is to jump. Like you're trying to actually jump off the ground and then slam your heels back down to get your feet flat to catch the weight. So all of these sports, all of these things that people point to is why you want to be on the ball of the foot, they have a different context for being athletic. So when you look at the context for being athletic on the bike, and then you look at sports and activities that are more similar to that context, you see that we want to have the whole foot supported, that we want to have the ball of the foot and the heel able to apply pressure into whatever you're standing on, and that this allows you to create more balanced energy going into whatever you're on, right? You don't get the pedals turning over and your toe pointing down. You're able to recruit your hips better. You're taking stress off of the knees and Achilles tendon. Like there's so many good things that happen when you put your foot in the right context to move on your bike. And the Catalyst pedal is the only pedal out there that is designed to do this, because again, it's designed from the standpoint of how does a human body optimally move on the bike? And now how do we apply this to the bike rather than, well, what is the traditional approach to this? And then we're not going to think about that. We're just going to design another Me Too product that goes along with that. So you can learn more at pedalinginnovations.com. So check that out there. MTB Strength Training Systems, my website, bikejames.com. You can go there and find all sorts of great information, training, riding information. You can sign up for free workouts. You can sign up for my newsletter. I send out weekly training tips. So it's just a really great resource for people looking for how to improve the engine on the bike as opposed to just focusing on the bike itself, right? So everybody knows it's more about the rider than the bike, but how do you improve that rider? And the stuff that I cover at bikejames.com, you know, with MTB strength training systems and my weekly newsletter, that is what I'm focused on, is to help you improve the rider so that you can enjoy riding more no matter what bike you're on. And also recently got certified through XPT as a breathing coach. And so I'm going to be doing more breathwork stuff. I've got a program I'm working on there. But in the meantime, if you are interested in doing some breathwork, getting breathing assessment, getting some recommendations for drills and things that you can do, learning how to use your breathing to instantly improve your cardio and your strength. Your breath is so powerful and so important once you learn how to use it proactively rather than using it reactively, which unfortunately is what a lot of us do, right? We wait until the situation demands that we start breathing a certain way rather than understanding how we can use our breath to, you know, drive the situation. And so, so anyways, I'm really excited to be sharing some more stuff with that. So, you know, sign up for the newsletter, if you're interested, hit me up at james@bikejames.com, to find out more about some of the breathwork stuff, but, until I get the programs out. But anyways, check it out there. So with all that said, let's get going with the podcast. So first question, I had a guy, email me, and it was a good question. It was a little bit of a roundabout way to get to where we're going. But his question in a nutshell was he has a groin injury. It's something that, you know, starts to bother him as he's riding. And so he had noticed that in the gym, when you're doing squats, that it's okay to turn your toes out a little bit. That, you know, a little outward turn is fine. But that generally during single leg exercises like lunges and things like that, the recommendation is to keep the toes pointed more straight. And so he was wondering, like, kind of why is that? Why is it okay to turn the toes out on one exercise, but not on another exercise? And at the heart of this was that he had noticed that when he turned his toes out on his pedals, that it relieved the groin pain. And I've also heard from riders who have found that turning their toes out relieves, you know, knee pain or ankle pain. So basically any sort of like leg up into the hip pain and discomfort, you know, you find that turning the toes out some relieves that pain. And so really what he was wondering is like, is that okay? Like, what is the big deal about turning your toes out a little bit? And is it okay if I do that on my pedals, especially since it seems to, you know, give me some relief? So first off, the first part of his question is, why is it okay to turn your toes out a little bit during squats, but not during lunges? And the simple answer for that is a squat is a bilateral exercise. We're trying to get both legs to work together to move the hips up and down, excuse me, as opposed to a squat. Or, you know, squat, we've got both legs working together as opposed to a lunge where we've got mainly one leg, right? Because like, even with a lunge, you've got the other leg on the ground. It is contributing in some way, but the main movement is coming from that lead leg. And so it's more of a single leg exercise. You know, that lead leg is what's responsible for moving the hips up and down as opposed to both legs working together to do it. So this is a structurally different thing, right? So the bilateral exercise, you're going to be structurally different than the single leg. And because of this, you can turn the toes out a little bit. Although I will say that realistically, you should be able to do a good body weight squat with your toes pointed mostly straight and even like your feet in pretty narrow. And so people get confused again because when we talk about the squat, are we talking about the movement or the exercise? And I think in this case, he's talking about the exercise. And the exercise is where we start to load this pattern. The exercise is where we're trying to create tension and get this pattern stronger or condition it in, excuse me, in some way. And so the difference is when you're doing the exercise, you will do some things differently, right? Like if I'm loading the squat, I will get myself into a slightly different position and secure myself in slightly different ways than if I'm just doing a body weight squat where there's no load. And so the requirements on the system are different. And so you should be able to do a body weight squat, you know, butt to heels, ass to grass, as they say, with the toes pointed mostly forward, right? Again, like maybe a little slight out is fine, but again, that's because structurally your hips are, you know, your leg is different in the hip structurally than when it's a single leg. And so this is where this outward turning is coming from more than anything else. But you're still trying to minimize that because the goal is to create the most efficient transfer of pressure through the foot into the ground. And if you turn the foot out too much, then you lose that. Okay, so I mean, ultimately, you're trying to keep the foot and the knee lined up. If you get the foot and the knee misaligned, so you have the foot turned out and the knee is pointed forward, you also see this if the foot is pointed forward and the knees are collapsed, right? Like these are two manifestations of the same problem, which is that your foot and your knee are actually getting misaligned. And so now this is the worst, right? Like we don't want that to necessarily happen. But the other thing that'll happen is turning the foot out. And people will turn the foot out to try to keep the knees from collapsing in. Again, this is a common thing is we know we don't want the knees to collapse in. So people will do whatever they need to not let the knees collapse in. And this includes turning the feet out. And this is why I really encourage you, if you do, you know, to check and make sure that it's more about having your knee lined up with your middle toe, right? Like you want the center line of your knee and your middle toe lined up with each other. And if you see that a huge variation in that, then that may not be good. And so so people will turn their toes out in order to compensate, right? Like they're like, oh, I don't want my knees to cave in. So if I turn my feet out, it looks like my knees are going straight. But you look and you see this misalignment between their feet and their knees. And so that's the first thing is you need to make sure that you're not turning the foot out and creating a misaligned foot and knee situation. And again, having the knee come in a little bit is fine. There's a rotational aspect to how we create energy. So we're not a piston, right? It's not a machine where you just want straight up and down. So a little inward and outward movement is okay. It's creating that rotational energy through the lower body that we want. But there's a difference between that and just having a misaligned knee and foot. And again, a good way to check this is to just have them, you know, check the bottom of your squat. Just get into a squat and hold that, and then either, you know, have someone take a picture or check and see where your knee and your foot are at. So isometrics are a great way to check your position with an exercise and see like, okay, how am I holding myself when I get down here, especially in like the weakest part of the position. And so that's the first reason that people turn their foot out. And that's not good. The other thing is just mobility in the hips. If the hips are tight, like you may actually have a good knee and foot alignment, but still feel like you need to turn your foot out. And that's a hip mobility issue. And by turning the foot out, you're able to just open up a little bit more space in the groin and the hip. And so this allows a little bit more ability. But again, the problem is when you turn the foot out, you start to decrease how efficiently you're able to transfer force into the ground or your pedal or whatever that is. And so there's a trade-off there. Now, if that's all there was, then maybe it's okay, right? Maybe you're like, well, you know, shoot, it feels better. Maybe I'm losing a little bit, but, you know, that's okay. But unfortunately, that's not all that's happening. I can tell you this from experience. Like, I had a groin injury. It was from a combination of mountain biking and doing jiu-jitsu. And I would do things similar to what's happening here. I would change either how I was holding myself on my bike or how I was doing things in jiu-jitsu. And the pain would get better and the pain would go away for a little bit. But the pain always popped back up, either in the same place or else somewhere else. Okay, and the problem is that we're not really addressing the problem, right? So we're creating something that makes it feel better in the moment, but we're not addressing the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is still there. And the underlying problem is still going to create problems. It's going to create either the same problem is going to get worse, or you're going to find that other places are starting to become problems because of how you're trying to protect yourself because of this other problem. You've got to fix the problem itself. You can't just, you know, point your feet out and change how you optimally move because it feels better in the moment, right? Like maybe you do that, but you understand that I have to be working towards this. And again, this is where the strength and the mobility and all of these things come in, because these are the things that are going to help reshape your body in a way that's going to allow you to actually get yourself and put yourself in better positions on the bike, where you're able to not only perform better, but you're also creating less wear and tear on the body as you're doing it, which again is the ultimate goal. Because if you want to do this for the long term, you have to watch those overuse injuries and things adding up. And having your foot turned slightly out is going to do that over time. And so you need to address those mobility issues. So one of the best things that I found for that is the frog stretch, or you know, frog flow, frog mobility flow. If you go to bikejames.com and type in frog stretch or you know, frog mobility in the search bar, you'll find a couple posts I've done on this. The most recent one is the one that I'm currently doing. And so this is what I learned it from Steve Maxwell at a seminar I went to. And the reason I went to is because my groin injury was getting so bad that I was really starting to have to look at taking some serious time off, and I didn't want to do that. And so I went to this seminar, which is also the one where I learned about isometrics and got me on that path. But he really showed me some good stuff, and one of them was the frog stretch series that I use today that really helped open up my groin. And so, you know, using that, and then also isometrics are a great way to train that as well, because you're able to get into these positions and you're able, since you're not moving, you're able to really focus on how you're holding yourself in these positions. So if you're doing a loaded squat, like a goblet squat or something like that, then you're going to have a tough time focusing on keeping perfect position. But if you're just in the position, and that's all you have to focus on, you're going to be able to focus on, you know, trying to get into and maintain that perfect position. So I would suggest that you're going to have to back off some. That's the other thing, is I didn't have to quit training completely, but I did have to back off training for about 6 weeks. And so the point is that you're going to have to, you can't just keep doing what you're doing. You're going to have to back off a little bit, because right now you have too much tension. You're going to have to do some things that help you, one, decrease the tension in that area, which is where the frog stretch you know, series comes in. And then you need to do some things that help you create the tension more efficiently in those positions, so you're taking the excess stress off of that area. And again, that's where the isometrics come in, because they help you you do that. And so, but to give those things a chance to catch up to the injury, you have to lay off the things that are creating the problem in the first place. And so you're going to have to lay off, you know, back off the riding, back off the strength training, give yourself like 6 to 8 weeks of, you know, like maybe 50% or less of what you were doing, and really focus on these other things and let your body heal and get better. And what you're going to find is when you get on the bike, you're going to be better than you are now, because you're not trying to work around these problems, these mobility issues or just misalignment issues or whatever it is. And so fix the problem itself is really the take home message there. So like I said, it is with squats, it is okay to have your toes pointed slightly out, but that's because it's just a different thing. But ultimately you're trying to move as efficiently as you can on the bike. And when you're talking about single leg exercises, and pedaling a bike is more of like a single leg exercise, then you need the toes pointed mostly straight in order to create the most efficient transfer of force through the foot into whatever it's on. And so if you hurt doing that, you need to figure out why, or you find it's physically impossible, right? Like, I just can't get my feet in that position. You need to fix the problem. It will catch up to you. You may be able to get away with it today, but if you want to do this for the long term, and you want to, you know, you don't want to have to keep dealing with other things popping up, fix the problem itself. And so, anyways, hopefully that gives you some stuff there. And lastly, before I move on to the next one, this is another subject I'll have to dive into a little bit more deeply, but you can't corner properly if your feet are pointed out. Okay, like having the duck foot pointed out, you can't corner properly. It's impossible. All right. Now, you may be able to figure out some way to corner, but you're not going to do it the most efficiently way possible, because the most efficiently way possible involves you creating rotational energy with your body into the bike to help turn the bike. And so this is where, you know, you'll sometimes hear the advice, like point your belly button where you want to go. But that's what this is saying. Like, if you're turning to the left, you need your hips rotating to the left in order to create this rotational energy in that direction. And if your toes are pointed out, your hips are going to be opened up. You're going to have a really hard time really rotating in your hips if your toes are pointed out. And so, I mean, you can try this yourself. Just stand up, you know, kind of get yourself in a pedal stance, you know, feet straight, and you know, rotate the hips versus having them out. And as soon as you duck foot yourself, as soon as you turn your toes out, you start to lock your hips in place. They have much less mobility rotationally. And so that's such a huge aspect of cornering. So not only is having your foot turned out just bad structurally, taking away from your power and performance, setting you up for overuse injuries, it's also taking away from your ability to corner properly. And so there's a lot of incentive for you to get your body to the point where you can get into the proper position on your bike, which includes having your toes pointed mostly forward. Again, the slightest of slight turns out is fine. But when you turn your toes out to the point where you start having to worry about your heels rubbing on your crank arms, you know, that's way too much, way too much. You know, you're doing that. That is not good. So anyways, that's it with that one. So we're going to move on to the next one, which is my new standards for MTB specific strength. Now, the main reason that I have to update these is because my original standards that I used were movement-based exercises. And, you know, that is to be expected, because that is the standard. It's still the standard in most circles, as far as like, how are we going to test strength? Well, we're going to test your deadlift, and we're going to test your, you know, bench press or chin ups or, you know, whatever it is. And most of the time, you know, sometimes there'll be a plank in there, which is an isometric hold. And so I'm not saying that there's nothing, but the vast majority of what you see used as strength standards revolve around movement-based exercises. And so, you know, as did mine. Again, my basic one was a 1.5 to 2 times body weight deadlift, which I still think has merit, right? Like, if you have the tension skills that you need in the hip hinge position, you should be able to do a 1.5 to 2 times body weight deadlift, you know, all other things being equal. But the problem is that when you start using the deadlift, because, you know, we say, hey, this is the test. Well, let's just train the test. That's the best way to get better at the test, is to just do deadlifts, which is, you know, that is right. That's how you're going to get better at deadlifting. So if you're a power lifter and you need to get better at deadlifting, well, guess what you need to do? You need to deadlift, because you need to get better at that skill, the movement skill of deadlifting. But if you're not a power lifter, you don't get, you know, that's not part of your sport, then really what you're interested in are what are the tension skills that you have in that position, right? Like, there's general tension skills that you want to transfer, right? Like, doing a deadlift isn't getting you better at riding your bike, right? Like, the specific thing of doing a deadlift is very far removed from your bike. But what there is excuse me, a general tension skill that you get from doing deadlifts that transfers to the specific positions that you need on the bike. That's why we do strength training, because it makes us quote unquote stronger. And then that allows us to be stronger in these positions on our bike. It's this transfer of tension skills that we're looking for. So it's really the tension skills that I'm interested in, not your skill with a movement-based exercise. And that's really what a movement-based exercise will test. And so this is why I like isometrics for testing for strength standards, because they're going to allow me to look at the tension skills more specifically than just the movement skills, right? Like, someone may just suck at a specific exercise, but if they have good tension skills in that general, you know, movement pattern, then the isometric hold isn't going to be as hard for them, right? Like there's a technical skill to doing a deadlift or a kettlebell swing or something like that. But you get somebody down in the bottom of a deadlift position and they have good mobility, good strength. Like they've been doing, like a farm boy has been out, working on the farm and doing similar movements, but he hasn't done the actual exercise itself, right? And this is one of these reasons, like farm boy can go in and deadlift a bunch of weight. Well, because he has the general tension skill from doing all the farm boy work. And he can go in the gym and apply that general tension skill to these specific things. But this is why, like, the farm boy work, which is leverage based, this is kind of a different, subject, is more specific to more things, which is why gym boy, his tension skills don't translate over to much more than the gym. Okay, because he's just got the specific skills of those movement skills and the tension skills that you get from those movement skills don't translate over to sport in real life as effectively as other things that you can do. And this is one of the reasons I like isometrics and leverage-based training and things like that. Because once you start to realize this, you see like, oh, there are better ways to do this, to get stronger for our sport than movement-based, compression-based exercises. But anyway, so on to the strength standards. So what I'm looking at with the strength standards are three positions. And so I'm looking at your upper body, push-up, because that is the range of motion, your ability to move your upper body up and down, full range of motion in the cockpit is your horizontal press, i.e. like push-up movement pattern. I'm also looking at your squat and, lunge pattern, ultimately your lunge pattern. I'll explain how this works here in a second, but I'm looking at your lunge pattern, which is the, sorry about that. My computer's making noises on me. The lunge pattern, which is your standing pedaling pattern on the bike, and then also your low hip hinge or low deadlift, and particularly your single leg deadlift, and your ability to hold that hinge position, low hinge position with in that single leg stance. And again, that's looking at that low attack position, which is kind of the extreme bottom position on our bikes. And so those are the three things that I'm looking at. And so the way that I do this is I kind of have two standards. I got like your entry level, like, hey, do you have, like, is your strength where it needs to be for you to ride your bike and even be able to start applying good skill? Or do you lack the basic movement skills or tension skills to do that, right? So there is a point, man. I know people don't want to freaking hear this, but this is the truth, is that riding a mountain bike is a physical activity and it requires a certain amount of strength to do, especially to do properly and to have fun and be safe with it. Like, you trying to make mountain biking conform to your weak ass is not good for you and it's not good for mountain biking. All right. So there are just basic like strength standards that riders need to understand. And it's like, oh, if I can't do these things, this is why I suck. Not because my bike is not good enough, not because the trails are too hard, not because of insert whatever excuse that you want to in there. It's because I suck. I don't have the basic strength levels needed to really do this properly. And until I get that, I just need to understand that. And I just need to ride and have fun, but work on getting these strength standards and not stress out too much. Because like getting pissed off at my bike when I can't meet these basic strength standards is going about this backwards. Okay. And so, again, I know this is not a popular time to make people have to take self-responsibility and take a hard look in the mirror and realize like how they are responsible for their own situation. But that is ultimately what you have to do if you're ever going to get better at anything in life, including mountain biking. So these strength standards are not meant to discourage people or, blah, 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 whatever the whiners say, right? These are just like, take it up with Mother Nature, right? Nature is not neutral. Nature has basic physical characteristics that it requires for you to be able to do things. And riding a mountain bike requires a certain level of strength. This is one of the reasons you see roadies struggle who come into mountain biking. Their actual like strength levels suck. And so that, they got lungs for days, legs for days, especially their upper body, man, their upper body strength levels are just horrible. And so they suffer because of it. And so like for them, like they need to get stronger. Like that's the best way for you to get better. And, but, you know, that, so I'm just saying, like, that's an example of like fit athletes from other sports coming into mountain biking that may find that they have to work on their strength, you know, because it sucks, you know, much less people just coming into it from the general population or, you know, things like that. So, so the strength standards, sorry, it's a little bit of a tangent rant there, but sometimes it needs to be done. Okay. So here are my standards. The basic standard is a high plank. So the top of your push-up position, you should be able to hold this for 60 to 90 seconds. And this includes maintaining good breathing patterns, which means that you are breathing into the, you know, using the diaphragm, so into the belly, the ribs, the low back, that you're, you know, just all of those things are being maintained. So we're talking about a good, solid, high plank, like top of your push-up position for 60 to 90 seconds. And the ultimate standard is where, okay, strength is no longer really a concern of yours. Like, you know, now it's skill and specific conditioning and, you know, things like that. Like, man, the strength is there, is your low push-up. So basically, like, coming down to the bottom of your push-up where you're just barely off of the floor, and hold that position. And my minimum for that is 30 seconds, right? Really, I'd like to see you at 60, right? Above that, 90 seconds and stuff is bonus. But you should be in that 30 to 60 second range for you to have good upper body strength or adequate upper body strength levels for mountain biking. The second one is your kind of, I'm looking at your standing pedaling position. And so the squat is the basis for this. And so you should be able to hold a body weight squat, you know, bottom, good form, bottom of a body weight squat for 60 to 90 seconds. And again, maintaining good breathing patterns, good posture. This should not be hard for you. Okay. And this is just a basic like health and longevity thing. Like your ability to squat low it really correlates strongly to the quality of your life, especially as you age. And so maintaining that good squat is important for many reasons, but that's just your basic standard. Now to the strength, right? The strength standard I'm looking for is a lunge. And so this is the bottom of a lunge. In fact, what I have people do is, you know, maybe you start at the top and go down and up, kind of find your foot position. But I have people start with their knee on the ground in a half kneeling position, nice and tall. And when you start, you just pick the knee up off the ground and you hold it there in that bottom lunge position. And again, you should be able to hold this one on both legs for 30 to 60 seconds, right? Like optimally 90 plus, but that 30 to 60 seconds is that minimum standard that I would be looking for. Again, you'll probably find a variation on the leg. You may have one that does good and one that does bad. And that asymmetry is going to cause you problems on the trail. And so you need to get that ironed out. The other one is the bottom of our attack position. Okay. And so the bottom of your hinge. And the first one I'm looking at is your pedal stance deadlift. And it's literally like getting your feet in the same position as you would on your pedals, which includes having your toes mostly forward, right? We just covered this. And being able to come down into your low hinge, your low attack position, and maintain that position for 60 to 90 seconds with both feet forward. And again, maintaining good breathing. Like this should be easy. Like this first standard should be get to the point where it's easy. Like just, if you get to 90 seconds and you're struggling, like technically you got there, but really, we're looking for more. We're looking for this to be easy, for you to just own this. Now, the next one, the more challenging one, the strength standard, is your single leg deadlift. And this is where you're taking one leg off the ground and you're coming down into that low hinge position and you're holding that for 30 to 60 seconds. And again, doing both legs. So that is my new strength standard. It's pretty basic, but those three positions, like your push-up, your lunge and your hinge, especially your single leg, you know, or pedal stance hinge, like those are your three core movements and you know, or I guess areas that create movement and movement patterns on the bike. And so checking your strength levels on those is what we're looking for. And, you know, beyond that, I would check your stick windmill, which is your ability to corkscrew properly and create rotational energy into and out of the bike while staying balanced on your feet, which is at the heart of cornering. And so, but between those three things right there, the strength standard and that one movement thing, I'm going to learn a lot about you as a rider. I'm going to know a lot about how you ride, where your strengths and weaknesses are, all sorts of things. And so, but when you can meet these standards, right, when you can do the low push-up, the low lunge, and the low single leg deadlift, and you can meet that, you know, 30 to 60 second standard, and you can do clean stick windmills, then at that point, like, it's not like movement and strength, like those aren't the big things holding you back. Okay, you continue to work on those, you can continue to refine those and improve those. But at that point, it's, you know, riding, it's more sport specific, your ability to apply that strength, those tension skills, and the that rotational movement to the bike. And that's that'll be the focus. But anyways, this is just you know, that is kind of the idea of the strength standards, is like, what should your focus be on right now? Are you just trying to get your body in the physical condition that it needs to do this this activity properly? Or are you to the point where you've done that and now you really need to focus on refining the sport side of it, which may include the equipment side, or, you know, really focusing on the technical skills? Like, and I'll tell you, like, this is one of the things I think a lot of people get way too worried about technical skills too early. And this is, and the reason is their body just doesn't have the strength and mobility to do the movements properly in the first place. So it's kind of like, you know, imagine, you know, you go to a math class and you skipped a few, you know, somebody feels, you know, feels, oh man, I'm going to make you feel better. I'm going to let you skip the first two levels of this math and just go to the third level. And I'm going to teach you stuff. And you'd be like, well, wait a minute, I need this basic stuff. I need level one and level two. Cause if you just put me at level three, I'm probably going to learn bad habits. I'm not really going to learn it. I may look like I'm learning something, but I'm not really going to understand it. I'm going to be just developing like these go arounds, and I may actually be developing bad habits. And so this is why we have these standard ways of teaching people math and language and things like that, because you understand that if you advance too quickly, you're going to actually screw them up. But the same thing happens with learning skills on your bike. Like, you need to have the strength and movement standards down, because if you go to like a weekend camp, or you know, sign up for some online skills training platform, and you don't, right, you don't have these things, the thing is like, you can't apply what they're telling you to do properly anyways. Okay, so you're putting the cart before the horse. If you had these movement skills, if you had these strength skills, these tension skills in place, now when you go to these resources, you can get way more out of them, because you're actually able to do what they're asking you to do. And so you can do yourself a disservice by jumping into the skills training stuff way too early. And so, like, these standards, like if you can't do the high plank, the squat, and the pedal stance, you know, low deadlift for that 60 to 90 second standard, and you really struggle with your stick windmill, which again, you can check that out at bikejames.com to, you know, see some videos on how to do that. But if you haven't met that standard and or you struggle with that movement pattern, you don't need to be worried about technical skills. You don't have what you need in place in order to be able to do it in the first place, right? Like, you can learn it, I guess, like, you know, go and you know, watching videos and getting the idea and seeing other people doing it right. Like, there's something to that. But you also just need to understand, like, all right, I'm not to the point yet where I can actually really apply that properly. And so I don't expect to. Like, maybe you practice it, but you realize I'm not going to do it perfectly, and you don't get all upset and then like go looking for the next like online training, you know, video or whatever. It's like, okay, I need to have these standards before I really start, you know, worrying too much about this aspect here. But that skills acquisition, I mean, that ability to move properly, to apply proper tension skills to the movement patterns that we need on the bike, you know, those things are prerequisites to being able to move and perform properly on the bike. And so again, like, these aren't meant to discourage people as much as help you understand, like, hey, are you frustrated and not seeing results because you're barking up the wrong tree, basically. You're worried about your equipment and your technical skills and things like that, when these are the things that are actually holding you back. And until you know what's actually holding you back, you don't know how to actually fix it. And so that's the whole point of the strength standards, is make sure these aren't what are holding you back before you advance on to these other things. So anyways, that's it for the strength standards. So the next one, last one that I got here, is training your brain versus building mental toughness. And I got this question from a guy who had bought a spin bike, and he was using it at home to do intervals. And the reason he wanted to do this, his motivation, was a good one. He's actually looking at this correctly, but you know, the way he could solve it a little bit better by looking at it a little differently. And so he had noticed that out on the trail, he would have a tendency to get to the heart of the top of a hard climb and then kind of relax and recover versus like really like pedaling through the top of it and continuing to keep going for just a little bit, you know, before starting to back off. And so he wanted to really train himself to continue to push through the top of a hill rather than just get to the top of a hill. And man, that's great, especially if you're racing. Like that bit right there can make a big difference, that bit of effort. And so, but the thing was, and what I point out to him and is important for people to understand, is that to train yourself to act a certain way in a certain situation is different than building general mental toughness. And if you're going to train your brain, then you need to recreate the scenario as best you can, and you need to visualize. You have to see it in your head as you're doing it, which is much different than a workout that's just kind of building mental toughness, which is it doesn't necessarily simulate any situation on the trail. And you're not thinking about any specific situation. You're just working hard. Like there's a lot of just, you know, a lot of cardio workouts kind of fall under this where you're just working hard. And it's really kind of building mental toughness on some level more than, you know, conditioning your brain to react in specific ways. And that's really what you want. Okay. Like there's a Malcolm Gladwell book called What the Dog Saw. And it's a collection of stories, that he had done. But that one was the central one in the book, was about the dog whisperer, Cesar Millan. And he was, the insight that Cesar Millan, he's the dog whisperer, you know, able to get these dogs who are completely out of control to behave and, you know, just really talented at what he does. And well, how do you do it? And he said that he actually got the insight from his marriage counselor that it wasn't what you think you're doing, it's what do they see, right? So it's not how do you think you're acting, it's like how does your spouse see what you're doing? And that's what you have to consider. Like you may think that you're being fine, but you realize like, oh, wait a minute, you know, some of my actions or my demeanor can make them think that I'm mad or something is different. And so it's really a matter of like, well, what are they seeing? I have to see what they're seeing through their eyes in order to really understand what I can do. And so this is where, you know, one of his, you know, insights is, you know, if you know, you're telling your dog to calm down, but you're all tense. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter what you're telling your dog to do. It's what the dog sees. The dog sees that you're tense. How do you think the dog's going to react? Right? It's going to be tense. And so the point of all of this is that your brain is like a dog. When you're creating training programs, it doesn't matter what you think you're doing. It only matters what does the dog see. That's the only thing that matters. And so when you're trying to train your brain to react a certain way in specific scenarios, you have to train the dog. You have to get the dog to see these scenarios in order for it to improve. And this is what you want to do, right? Like this is problem solving on the trail. You know, hey, I struggle with a specific situation. How do I get better at it? Then you get better at it. And then there's another situation. Hey, I struggle with this situation. How do I get better at that? And you know, that's the continual process of improvement that, you know, that we want. And so that ultimately boils down to training your brain, not necessarily just building mental toughness. So, you know, doing hard workouts and hard cardio workouts and all this stuff because it's hard. You know, there's a place for that, but like I said, it's really building more mental toughness. Like all you got to do to create mental toughness training is create a hard situation for you to suffer through and then suffer through it. And that'll make you more mentally tough. You make it through something that's hard and it will make you more mentally tough. This general mental toughness, and it has a place. But the problem is that type of training is very hard on the body. especially after you've been training for a while, right? Now all of a sudden you got to push yourself harder and harder and harder to create a stressful situation where you're having to suffer through it. And this gets harder and harder and harder on the body. And so this has a much higher, you know, injury potential with it, you know, burnout, overtraining. And so that type of training is very tough to sustain, especially over the long run. So training the brain is actually much more effective, but it requires more thought, both about the type of workout you're going to do and during the workouts itself. Like I said, you have to think about, well, how do I simulate as best I can this specific situation? I want it to feel that way. And then you got to visualize it. Like, people really discount the power of visualization. Like, you seeing yourself in situations as you're doing. Like, I remember, you know, back in the day doing power cleans when I first started riding, and I would see myself like coming up to, you know, something that I needed to bunny hop over, and I'm doing my power clean while visualizing, okay, I'm coming up and okay, go, boom. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think that was the best way to necessarily train that. Like, don't take too much from that. You know, it was more just my attempts to try to like figure out what's going to be the best way to train this new sport that I love. This is a long, long, long time ago when I first started doing it. But my point is that visualization aspect was something that I had learned about from track and sports training. And I tried to find ways to apply that to my training. And I think that's one of the things that helped me be successful at riding was, you know, I wasn't just riding when I was riding. I was riding when I was working out, right? Like, I was visualizing these situations. I was seeing these things in my mind as I was doing them. And so your brain, it is very tough for your brain. They say that it can't differentiate. I mean, it has to be able to differentiate on some level, right? Between something real and something fake, you know, something that you're just thinking. But the point is that when they study this, when they study visualization with athletes and things like that, they find that just thinking about the activity, the brain fires the same neurons. It recreates the same stuff going on when you're actually doing the movement itself. And so thinking about these things has a lot of power. And so that you want to tap into that visualization aspect in order to train the brain and in order in these situations. And so again, like, if I was going to do something like this, like, you know, he's got a spin bike, so I would have it where I would crank the tension up really high so that you're, you know, going up and standing up like you feel like you're on a, you know, standing climb, grinding it out to the top. And as you get to the top, you crank it off a little bit and you just keep going and you crank it down, like, you train yourself to like, okay, I'm at the top and I feel the tension decreasing, because that's the signal, right? Like, you get to the climb, there's all this tension in the system and you're just waiting for the tension to go away. You're just waiting for a chance for the tension to decrease so you can relax and start to recover from it. And so your brain is looking for that decrease in tension. And so if you can train it to like, no, man, no, I'm going to decrease this tension, but I'm going to keep pushing hard and I'm going to see it in my head as I'm doing this. I'm getting over this climb and it's getting easier, but no, I'm not going to relax, man. I'm going to keep pushing another like 5-10 seconds, whatever it is. And then, okay, now I'm going to relax. And you know, whatever that is how you would want to try to train that scenario. Okay. Like, there are, like, that is going to be much more effective than just doing intervals in an attempt to try to build your quote unquote cardio, because you know this is your problem, right? So again, there's a place for just general cardio. I mean, I think people do way too much of it. Like, really the best thing you can do is ride your bike, right? And then look for these scenarios that you need to work on and maybe repeat them. Like, if you have a climb that's really tough and you got to work on, like, maybe you just session that climb 2 or 3 times and really train yourself on that climb itself to behave this way. And so people really discount the value of their riding, both for their cardio fitness and also just how specific it is. It is the most specific form of training you can do, right? So, but outside of that, if you're looking to create cardio workouts or even, like, you know, strength training workouts, like, if you know that you struggle with specific situations on the trail, then try to think about ways that you can recreate those things, how they feel, and then you visualize yourself there as you're doing them and feeling it. You're going to get way, 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 way more out of that than you will just trying to build general mental toughness. So again, there's a time and a place for that, but there's just way too much of it. People do way too much just general hard cardio training in an attempt to build quote unquote cardio or, you know, their mental toughness, and it just breaks them down. And there's a much easier and a much more efficient way to do it if you utilize visualization and trying to create scenario specific workouts as opposed to just the general stuff. So anyway, that's going to do it. That's it for that question. And that is the last question that I had for this podcast. Hopefully you guys got some stuff to think about. If you have any questions on this, you can post a question or post it in the comments with the blog post that has this podcast. You can also hit me up at james@bikejames.com. Always happy to help. Remember to check out MTB Strength Training Systems at bikejames.com, where you can sign up for my free newsletter and, you know, weekly training tips, all sorts of great training information there. And also check out the Catalyst Pedal at pedalinginnovations.com and learn more about the real science and movement principles behind the pedal stroke, and then make up your own decision. Like, really, that's what I really want to encourage people to do. Like, don't just believe me. Like, you know, look at my research, which is more research than Bike Shop Guy or most people out there have done themselves who talk like they know what they're talking about here. But then look at that and then do your own research. Like, look into it more. Find out if there's more there. Like, make your own decision on this. But I'm confident that if you do that, that if you start to look at what the actual science and movement principles tell us, and you make your own decision, not just what the cycling industry pressures you into thinking, that you're going to find that the support provided by the Catalyst Pedal is really what we're looking for, and is just going to open up so many things. Your performance, you're going to feel better. It's just such a different experience for your feet and your whole body on the bike. So go check that out at pedalinginnovations.com as well. 30-day money-back guarantee on those. We're the only people in the industry to do any sort of money-back guarantee. Like, nobody believes in our product as much as we do, right? Like, nobody will back up what they do with a money-back guarantee because they don't trust you guys, right? Like, people think we're crazy. Like, they're like, holy crap, people must just buy your pedals, beat them to crap, send them back to you, get the money back, buy another pair, beat them to crap. I'm like, no, man. Like, you don't understand people. Like, riders are better than that, man. Like, you don't want that sort of karma sitting on your head. Like, we do a dangerous sport. You don't want bad karma sitting on your head. Like, I find that the, you know, riders in general, man, you guys are good, honest people. Like, you just want a good product that's going to take care of you and a company that's going to back it up. That's all you want. And if people will provide that, you're going to be good to them. You're going to treat them well. And so you're not going to take advantage of the money back guarantee. So, like, that's why we do it, and that's why we continue to do it. But it's also why no one else will do it, because they don't trust you guys, and they don't really believe in their product as much as we do. But anyways, yeah, so go check us out, pedalinginnovations.com. So that's going to do it for this podcast. I will talk to you guys in the next one. So have a good rest of your day, and I will talk to everybody later.